It's Monday, March 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, a deadly blast rips through a crowded park in Pakistan.
Syrian military forces backed by Russian and government warplanes have succeeded in restoring peace and security to the town of Palmyra.
Islamic State is out of an ancient city in Syria. Also ahead, presidential candidates speak about the Brussels attacks, a famous home for music that you may never have heard of. It's all on today's International Edition. Pakistani officials say a suicide bomb blast went off Sunday at a crowded public park in the eastern city of Lahore. Among the many people in the park were a large number of Christian families celebrating Easter. A spokesman for a breakaway faction of the Pakistani Taliban claimed responsibility for the bombing and said it specifically targeted Christians. VOA reporter Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad joins us with more details of the deadly explosion.
Well, this is a very famous park in the city, and in fact, it was Easter today, and most of members of the Christian community, they were also present with their kids, and apparently a suicide bomber struck the area of the park where mostly kids were playing with their parents, and what we have so far is that at least 70 people have died in this massive explosion, and more than 350 people have been wounded. The latest information is that more than 100 of them are really seriously wounded, and doctors are struggling to save their lives. So there are fears that death toll is likely to increase.
We have information saying that perhaps the Pakistani Taliban was responsible for this.
We received a phone call from a spokesman for a splinter faction of the Pakistani Taliban. I mean, it used to be part of the Pakistani Taliban, which has been waging this insurgency against the state here. But this is the faction which has broken ties with the main Pakistani Taliban, but it has claimed responsibility. And the spokesman clearly said that the target of the bomber was actually the Christian community. And it was well planned, and they knew that today is Easter, and most of the Christian community members, they flood this park. So that's what the spokesman claimed, but obviously it's very difficult to verify these kind of claims. Yeah, it was quite a devastating incident that happened in Pakistan, and a meeting of the top civilian and political, civilian and military leadership has ended. It was like a four-hour meeting where this incident was debated, and instructions have been issued to try to quickly identify and bring to justice those who were responsible or who facilitated this attack.
Lahore has been subject to several attacks over the past couple of years. What would the security be like in that area, knowing that it's Easter and the Christians would be congregating at that time?
Well, this is the most populous province of Pakistan, Punjab province, I mean, of which Lahore is the capital city. And usually the security is tight, and the Pakistani Taliban has mostly targeted places in northwestern Pakistan. This is eastern Pakistan. An attack on Punjab, which is basically the political bastion, and which is actually really the 60% of Pakistan, is a serious blow to the efforts that the Pakistani army has been making to really uproot bases of these militants in the northwestern country. So it shows that they are really still capable of carrying out these kind of massive attacks. But we are hearing from the authorities is that because the operations to uproot bases and training facilities of these terrorists in northwestern Pakistan near the border with Afghanistan have been so successful that now these militants who are, according to officials, on the run are now trying to hit these soft targets like public places. And that's what the officials are saying, that it demonstrates the frustration on part of the militants. But again, it's quite a massive incident and massive attack. And this is going to have a serious impact on all the efforts the government has been making to improve security so that economy, the struggling economy, could be improved and more investment could be attracted to the country. But that is quite a massive attack, and we see the coverage of this bombing on local television channels has been so massive that it has really created a psychological impact, and obviously it will have its implications for all the efforts the government has been making to improve security and economy especially.
We greatly appreciate the latest update on this. Ayaz Gul in Islamabad, thank you so much at this late hour for joining us.
Thank you.
Ayaz Gul is on Twitter, and he's posting updates constantly at Ayaz Gul 64, and I'm also passing along his stories at VOA Stevenson. The United States condemned in the strongest terms the attack in Lahore, calling it a cowardly act in what has long been a scenic and placid park. That, a statement from National Security Council spokesman Ned Price. We turn to our social media segment. Abby Lee joins me in the studio to tell us online reaction to our top story. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
I saw that it's a trending topic on Facebook. What are people saying?
So Facebook sent out a statement apologizing for a bug with its safety check feature, and people are having a lively conversation about it. What it is notification that's activated following a bombing or a natural disaster in an area. And if you're in the area, you get to check whether you're safe or not. And then Facebook will let your Facebook friends know about your status. Now, the problem today was, if you can call it that, was that the notification was sent out to people outside of the affected area and really way out. Because even I got a notification this morning about Lahore. Did you get one?
Oh, wow. No, I didn't. So what did that statement say exactly?
It clarified that asking people not affected by the crisis whether they are okay is not the intent of the safety check product, and the issue is resolved, and that they apologize to anyone who mistakenly received the notification.
So what did the lively conversation entail?
Most people are very understanding about the incident. One Facebook user replied, "I got the same thing, and I'm in Oklahoma. Just a bit out of the area, just a bit, but I don't mind. I'm glad you care, Facebook." Now, that reply got more than 80 likes. Other people wrote, "You don't have to apologize, Facebook. This service has proven to be invaluable many times since its implementation." But of course, there are people who are always a bit more critical than others. Mm-hmm. One person wrote, "You," referring to Facebook, "hope the people in the area of the explosion find safety check a useful and helpful way to let their friends and family know they're okay." So what you're really saying is, we intentionally made our product malfunction for free advertising in the wake of a bombing.
Mm. Well, moving on to Twitter, how big is the story there and what are people saying about it?
Hashtag Pakistan has been used 200,000 times around the world today, and the number is increasing by the hour. Two U.S. presidential hopefuls are tweeting about it, and here's John Kasich on the Republican side. He wrote, "Let us remember the victims as we gather strength and resolve to defeat all who threaten our values." More than 400 people liked that tweet. Democratic contender Bernie Sanders wrote, "We are grieving today for the families affected by the deplorable attack in Lahore. No one should ever fear taking their children to a park." More than 6,000 people liked that tweet. Back to you, Jim.
Well, thank you for the Twitter wrap-up, G.
Absolutely.
She tweets on our program's account at VOA underscore IE and also from her own account at G. Abby Lee. And again, you can follow me on Twitter at VOA Stevenson. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all, from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Oh,
This is VOA's International Edition. Syrian government forces, backed by Russian airstrikes, have recaptured all of the iconic historic oasis town of Palmyra from Islamic State forces. Witnesses, however, report some scattered gunfire inside the city that have been seized by IS militants 10 months ago. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
A Syrian army spokesman claimed victory for government forces on state TV. He says that Syrian military forces backed by Russian and government warplanes have succeeded in restoring peace and security to the town of Palmyra and surrounding areas following wide-scale operations, killing many Islamic State fighters and destroying their weaponry. Rami Abdulrahman, who heads the opposition Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, told Arab media that he believes the Islamic State group is still resisting in some parts of the city. He says that a number of Islamic State suicide bombers are still present inside the city. Gunfire can still be heard in some districts, and that fighting was taking place at the nearby military airport. Abdulrahman claimed that Russian warplanes have conducted around 1,000 airstrikes in the effort to expel Islamic State fighters from Palmyra. Syrian military analyst Turki Sucker told State TV that the government's victory over Islamic State in Palmyra now paves the way for a final push against the terrorist group in the desert town of Deir Zor near the Iraqi border. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
About a week after deadly attacks, Brussels remains on edge as several of those involved in the plot remain on the loose. But investigators in the Belgian capital appear to have made several advances in the case in recent days. On Sunday, Brussels police carried out 13 new raids in and around the capital, detaining 9 people for questioning in connection with terrorism. 5 were later released, according to the federal prosecutor. The statement gave no information about the searches and did not specifically mention the Brussels attacks. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman joins us with perspective from the U.S. presidential hopefuls and how they are reacting to the Brussels attacks.
Well, Jim, we are roughly 1 week since the attack in Brussels, and I definitely detect an impact on the rhetoric that we're hearing in the U.S. presidential campaign. This is an election cycle where I would say that economic concerns have been predominant, but following the attacks in Paris last year and following this most recent attack in Brussels, we are seeing more of a national security, domestic security focus in the wake of what is clearly a terrorist threat.
No question, during an election cycle, economics takes a front seat because everybody's worried about their jobs and how much money they're going to make and taxes and that sort of thing. But, yeah, especially since 9/11, security has really been at the forefront in the United States. And a lot of candidates have different opinions about what should be done or what is being done in the United States. Some feel we're quite vulnerable. Others feel, no, we're doing a good job.
There are 5 remaining presidential contenders. There is Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, and John Kasich on the Republican side, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side. All of them have spoken out in the wake of the Brussels attack. And there are some distinctions. Ted Cruz has said that he wants to bomb ISIS into oblivion, following up on earlier remarks where he said that he doesn't know if sand can glow from bombing, but he would like to find out. So clearly the most bombastic rhetoric that we're hearing. Donald Trump saying that, of course, we need to keep Muslims out of the United States, as he has said before. He was asked on a U.S. television network whether he would consider internment camps for American Muslims, similar to the way that Japanese Americans were put into camps during World War II. And he said no. But he did say that NATO is essentially an outdated organ that is no longer suited to fighting terrorism. It never was really suited to fighting terrorism in his estimation, and that some successor organization needs to be created. On the Democratic side, there is a real call to tone down the rhetoric, not just from the presidential candidates, but from President Obama himself. All of them are arguing on the Democratic side that when extreme rhetoric is used, that feeds into the message and to the propaganda of terrorists, and it makes it a war, a sort of a clash of civilizations, and that if anything, this helps those who would want to do evil.
And as we've seen, there are many factors involved in attacks, even in Europe, because it affects the economic markets, which affects our markets. It has all sorts of ripple effects throughout our society and things that are happening here that would potentially influence voters.
I would imagine that should there be major terrorist attacks, more in Europe and one in the United States, that one of the things that we would see would be a huge spike in the price of oil. Right then, I mean, Americans would see it as soon as they get into their car and they need to fill up and get a tank of gas. Yes, indeed. There is a direct correlation.
Well, we enjoy seeing what's going on each and every week with our VOA Senate correspondent, Michael Bowman. Mike, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Jim.
And this story and many others by Michael Bowman you'll find on our website at voanews.com. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
The Library of Congress is, of course, known for its vast collection of books, available not only to members of Congress, but to everyone. And one of the interesting resources offered is the National Recording Registry, which adds culturally significant audio to its vault every year. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald joins us with the latest inductees.
Jim, this is one of the more fascinating little bits of musical culture that I really am interested in because it's just so eccentric. It's the National Recording Registry of the United States Library of Congress. Now, the Library of Congress, it is sort of like the nation's sound recording attic. I mean, they have over 3 million sound recordings. Mm. 450 of them, as of this year, have entered into the National Recording Registry. Now, the registry was established as part of the National Recording Preservation Act of 2000. And every year, it gathers 25 recordings that are of major cultural and historic importance to the United States. And some of this year's inductees include Piano Man, the 1973 debut hit single from Billy Joel.
I'm surprised they don't have that already.
Sing us a song, you're the piano man. Sing us a song tonight.
Master of Puppets by Metallica. This is their second album from 1986, and it's the first heavy metal album preserved by the Library of Congress. You have Gloria Gaynor's disco classic, I Will Survive.
I'll survive.
You have A Love Supreme by jazz saxophonist John Coltrane. Now, the oldest recording this year is a 1911 recording of Let Me Call You Sweetheart by the Peerless Quartet. And the list also includes some spoken word recordings. We have George Marshall outlining his Marshall Plan for Europe. in a speech from 1947. And we have fourth quarter coverage of Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point basketball game
in
1962. And
in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Wilt set a record that stands to this day with that game. These are just some of the incredible recordings that are now in the registry. And as I say, it runs the gamut, and you never know what is going to end up there. And if you want to see the entire list, you can go to my Twitter page, Ray on the Hits.
That's an excellent resource for anybody. It has the entire registry right there, plus much, much more from around the world.
I'm always adding. Right. It's so much bigger than all of us.
I bet if you tried to listen to this stuff end to end, you'd never get through it all in a lifetime.
Most likely. But every year they just add new and interesting recordings. I should mention also that they are now taking online suggestions for next year's registry. So if you have any particular favorites, you can just go online and suggest it. It's
okay, you can suggest this very interview if you like.
We can be immortalized. We can live forever.
Ray, it's always fun to have you come by and tell us about all of these wonderful and interesting places that our music ends up in besides our iPods.
Absolutely. You never know.
And as he mentioned, Ray on the Hits is your place to go on Twitter. Ray, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Jim.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at our home, voanews.com. There you can download our program or stream it. You can also follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter. Engineer Daryl Smith. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We thank you so much for spending a little part of your day with us, and we hope the rest of it is great.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
During my term as ambassador, writes U.S. Ambassador to Tajikistan, Elizabeth Millard, I hope to increase our positive engagement with the government and people of Tajikistan, not only with respect to our shared interest in stability and economic prosperity, but also on other important issues like respect for human rights, freedom of speech, civil society, and democratic engagement. In an introductory op-ed published March 16th, the new U.S. ambassador writes, "The United States supports Tajikistan's goals of security, democratic reform, and economic growth. Since establishing diplomatic relations in 1992, we have provided over $1 billion in assistance to Tajikistan and are using these funds to improve food security, strengthen education and health care, develop local governance and civil society, and bolster Tajikistan's sovereignty and security." The embassy of the United States in Dushanbe, she noted, is working in cooperation with the government of Tajikistan, as well as other international partners, on a broad range of initiatives to help Tajikistan continue to develop its capacity to understand, identify, deter, and defeat legitimate internal and external threats while respecting human rights and the rule of law. These initiatives support our mutual goals of promoting peace, security, and stability in Central Asia and beyond. I will work to strengthen our partnership with Tajikistan to address these serious challenges and to grow our robust security partnership. The long-term security, stability, and prosperity that Tajikistan desires can only come through a strong commitment to improving governance, respect for rule of law, development of the economy and business environment, and protection of its people's rights and freedoms. The U.S., she writes, intends to continue to promote respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms, including religious freedom, while also supporting Tajikistan's efforts to counter violent extremism. The U.S. also seeks to prepare Tajikistan to increase its economic prosperity. Historically, Tajiks were a nation of traders, writes the ambassador, and we will work together with the government, business associations, and entrepreneurs to further improve the business climate for investments in this country. The U.S. and Tajikistan, writes Ambassador Millard, have accomplished so much during the past 25 years of our relationship, and I look forward to seeing what we can achieve in the next 25.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.